I can specifically remember lying there in bed with her next to me asleep and feeling like I had to escape. I felt like what's going on? And all these memories just started flooding back to me, and just laying there staring at the scene like, what is this? I remember at the time I had an Audi R8 and I was maybe driving it on the highway, maybe 160 miles per hour, and I was in my head thinking like, I'm going to take it up this ramp and off the bridge.
Really, there's no out to life. I've searched for it for many different ways and angles through all the different ceremonies I've done, and ultimately found that there is no out to this universe. We're made of the universe. We're part of the universe. We're made of this earth. We're part of this earth. And so even if we could somehow get out of the body, we can't get out of the soul. All right, here we go on the Blue Morpho podcast. I'm Hamilton Souther, and I'm bringing you in-depth conversations into the lives of different influencers, podcasters, and ridiculously successful people in the world. Today, we have Sabri Ghazale on the podcast. Sabri, welcome.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Hamilton. Pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. We got to meet through other friends, and then I got to be on your podcast, which was an incredible experience. So the first thing I want to talk about is podcasting and how it's been for you since you started a podcast. And how's that going?
Yeah, so I started mine in January, and I've been consistent. There's only been a couple of weeks where I haven't released an episode. I have a different guest on each time. But yeah, I think I'm 16 episodes in now, and I've been really honored by the people that have joined me, you know, kind of so early on, and I've had some amazing messages and feedback on the shows. So it's it's been beautiful, and a beautiful opportunity to show up and to speak and to share and to be received is beautiful.
What was the calling for you that made you make this transition into podcasting, and what did you want to accomplish?
I actually, back in November, I actually sat in nature and asked, what do you want from me? To the, you know, asking to the all that is. And actually the answer that I got back was, you know what you're meant to be doing. You've got things to share. And I guess I've always felt like that. And I think I was always waiting. I think I always felt like I had to be further along before I was ready to start sharing. And that was my own noise. And I kind of was told that, no, like it's time, you know, it's time to do it. And part of that for me was the podcast and a way of just showing up just very honestly and authentically and just being okay with it having a slow growth. And if there's just one person that gets value from it, then it's worth doing. And that's the approach that I took.
So far, what's been the most impactful thing about running the podcast?
I would say one is showing up as what I feel is like kind of the most authentic expression of who I am, talking about the things I'm deeply passionate about, things that maybe I would have censored myself on in regular conversations previously, but now just being willing to show up like that publicly for anyone, anywhere that wants to hear. And I think there's something incredibly liberating about that. I feel like it's given me more of this kind of path into just stepping into who I am, but being deeply, feeling deeply secure in that. And like, it's really okay to be who I am, because I think all of us go through these kind of, you know, we have elements of us where I think, oh, is that part of me okay? And feel, you know, questioning aspects of ourselves. So I feel like it's allowed me to just really show up as me. And then the first few times where I shared certain things, I was almost waiting for the backlash. And then, oh, there was none. It's okay. So I think that's been one. And then I'd say the second thing is just some of the people that I've had, you know, conversations with and I've been able to meet, and maybe just realizing my seat at the table a little bit. That's been really powerful too.
It's amazing. You know, when I was on the first podcast, I wondered, you know, how you're supposed to be or how you're supposed to act. And I came to realize that there's this gap in the whole zeitgeist of what's out there for you, because you're the only you that can be there. And so I would look through social media and not really want to participate or have any certain reservations. And then I would look at it and be like, well, there's no one there like me. And then I realized there isn't supposed to be anyone there like me, because it's truly the unique miracle that we each, you know, represent. And for you, what it was like to find your voice and start just sharing that voice?
It's been, interestingly, for someone that I kind of first got into kind of traditional self-development, when I was 14, I was listening to like the Nightingale Conant kind of originals of Wayne Dyer and Zig Ziglar and Stephen Covey and Brian Tracy. And so I've always been a lord to the personal growth. And I was 35 last week, so I guess that was 21 years ago. And I would actually say that as far as kind of the personal growth journey, whatever that looks like for different people, but for me, just finding my voice has been one of the most powerful things, I would say, to just feel this deep sense of ease of being who I am. It's so, yeah, very powerful, to be honest.
So early on, you know, 14, 15 years old, looking at those different teachers, what from that time really stands out for you as still being really important, you know, 20 years later?
I think it was the realization that my life didn't have to be a certain way and that I had the power to influence it. I think that was the biggest thing that stood out to me from a young age. That was like, I kind of felt trapped in being this person that I felt so, what's the right word? Just unsafe in who I was and in being me. And it was like there was the possibility of possibilities. And I think that's what was presented to me that stood out then, that I would say that stayed with me the entire time, that I've always got the possibility of evolving and I'm not fixed.
I mean, that's a really impactful time, this like 14, 15 year old period of time going into, you know, really like early young adulthood. And then from there, you know, kind of that trajectory through the 20s. Who was your favorite teacher? And, you know, what really stood out from that single teacher?
Oh, that's a good question and a difficult one to answer, because I feel like I listened to so many different people. And I would also say that for different times in my life, depending on the lane that I was in, different people really kind of stood out and gave me something that I needed then. So the first person I started listening to was Wayne Dyer. And I had a cassette tape collection. And for me, he was really powerful because there was a very calming effect that he had on me. And at that age, I was very volatile and explosive. And that was really kind of some of the medicine that I needed then, was to kind of find this more of a sense of peace within me. So that was very powerful first starting out. I found that, you know, like, you know, really kind of traditional, Tony Robbins, for example, as I got a little bit older, for that idea of I could create more and I could actually kind of move towards a future that I wanted by being more motivated, as an example. And then I would say Eckhart Tolle, I really enjoyed listening to, maybe about, probably first started listening to him about 10 years ago. And actually I was just offered a scholarship, which started yesterday, to do like becoming a teacher of presence, like a 5-month training with him, which was really beautiful. And yeah, you know, just again, that kind of like presence and almost learning how to just quiet the noise, because I've got a very busy mind at times. And I sometimes can get lost in, you know, depth of thought and kind of the complexity of what everything means. And then sometimes just being able to find that stillness is, oh, okay, there it is. So yeah, really, I would say different people at different times. Peter Sage is someone who I had on the podcast, and I attended one of his seminars 7 years ago. And he was kind of, I would say that there was like a flip from, maybe some more of the how do I achieve more, to going a little like deeper down to addressing some of my like early years and formative things that kind of created some of the patterns that I had. So yeah, honestly, I would say just different people at different times of my life up to the back end of last year. So Dr. Mark Gaffney was on Aubrey Marcus's podcast in November. And I think it was maybe just 3 or 4 episodes after you were on there. And he was talking about some aspects of the teachings of like, he has a like unique self theory. And it was right at a time where I was kind of going through this emergence, and he was saying some things that just at that moment felt like, this is exactly what I'm going through. So sorry, long answer. But yeah, I feel like really different people at different times, depending on where I've been.
It seems like I've heard that story a lot of where the teacher seemed to find you, or there's like a convergence of synchronicity that brings the different teachers and understandings that are needed at that time. And there's a kind of resonance associated with it. I remember very early on being presented with Eckhart Tolle's work as well through my mom, who showed it to me, and really getting into the idea of now and the, you know, centered presence and the here now moment. And Wayne Dyer as well was one of her favorites. I think it's amazing how the sort of path unfolds for you. And there's so many commonalities that we all go through on that path. I've started to think over the years that it's really intergenerational, that we're all, as we go through an entire lifetime at different phases, needing these teachers to show up and help us. And they're all leaving the breadcrumbs or the, you know, the footsteps for us to be able to follow in and learn from. But I am really interested in how in our generation and younger, it seems like younger people are getting interested in these ideas earlier in life. So instead of, you know, going through a life and being introduced to these concepts at maybe like 40 or 50 years old, people are now being introduced to them like you at such a young age. I think that's really amazing. For you, from that point going on into your 20s, what did it look like going from your teenage years into your 20s? And how was that part of the evolution for you?
Yeah, it's really interesting, actually, because I was taking some good time to reflect last week on the idea of 7-year cycles. And turning 35, I've just entered into a new 7-year cycle. And actually, I can look back at 21 and 28 and how there really were very definitive 7-year cycles that occurred for me. And I would say the 21 to 28 was, I think I fell into the trap of what a lot of traditional kind of self-help might lead you to, which is more, more, more. And how can I achieve more, be more, have more, do more? And I would actually say that those ages 21 to 28, I was what I would describe building a tall building with no foundation. And 20, it was the, I guess the November of when I was 27, which is interesting because November seems to come up as a very notable time for me over the last quite a few years. But November when I was 27, it's when I experienced, I guess, the dark night of the soul, where I really kind of experienced some heavy depression. And it's actually kind of came out of nowhere. And I had built a life that I thought, and maybe a lot of young men would think they would want. And it included, you know, business success and dating many attractive women and being in great shape and all that stuff that I think a lot of men kind of were kind of potentially told, hey, this is what you want, here it is. So I did a lot of that. I built my business at 21. And then, yeah, 28 is when I first did ayahuasca and then really started going like deep in. And that was the last 7-year cycle for me, really. The last 7 years was fully going in, not really feeling much passion for anything that I was doing where my soul felt aligned. And then this November, having this calling and now kind of coming out, entering 35, moving forwards, feeling like I'm truly ready to share the things that I've learned, the expression of who I am, and just feeling this, the deepest calling to connect with people that resonate and be able to offer the gifts that I've learned along the way.
I've seen on social media recently, you know, really for like the last years, maybe even the last 5 years, these motifs that get presented, these emblems. It seems like more time in the gym, more muscle, more supplements. And then it seems like, you know, more dating and more ways to be able to date more. and then more possessions that are flashier and more expensive. And, you know, tossed in there with some mental development and some ideas of like, you know, meditation and some routines. And that all of that is supposed to ultimately add up to this like perfect life. And, you know, those same ideas were there when I was a kid as well. They're just not as flashy, not as bling, you know? And so having gone through that and living it, I lived it too in my own ways, started to see through it in my early to mid 20s in a really strong way. For you, what was it like to ultimately go through that? And then, you know, at that time that you quote had it all, you know, what was it really like? What do you think triggered the dark night of the soul?
I think, interesting. And I think I'm fortunate that it seems that I've done everything a little bit earlier in life, like getting into self-development at 14, starting the business at 21, and realizing at 28, I was climbing up a ladder that was leant against the wrong wall. And so maybe I've done it all. Maybe I went through my midlife crisis at 28 instead of 42. but it was, it had to happen. It absolutely had to happen, because I didn't address any of the things that I'd kind of, I think sometimes we get allured to the things that we think are going to cover up a sense of emptiness that we feel, or things that we think will take away some of the pain of being who we are, or the shame around who we are because of the things that we've experienced. And ultimately, so much of, I was so driven throughout my 20s, and it was all out of insecurity. It was all out of, just not feeling like it was okay to be me, ultimately. And that was my driving force. And then it actually happened through a relationship. I met someone who actually is the mother of my daughter, and there was just some energetic resonance about her, and she was the perfect person that just seemed to trigger all of the things that was aspects of myself that I'd completely forgot existed from, you know, through my teen years, the person that I was kind of escaping. I actually forgot how I used to feel back then, completely had no recollection of it. And then something happened one evening. I can specifically remember lying there in bed with her next to me asleep and feeling like I had to escape. I felt like what's going on? And all these memories just started flooding back to me, and just laying there staring at the scene like, what is this? that was the beginning of that next chapter.
Amazing. What happened next? So you had that at night. Did you wake up in the morning and things changed, or did you wake up in the morning and you just, you know, carried on? How did you try to even deal with that?
It got heavy. It got really heavy for quite some time. I was having breakdowns. I was, I remember at the time I had an Audi R8 and I was maybe driving it on the highway or the motorway that we say here. Maybe, I don't know, 160 miles per hour. And I was in my head thinking like, I'm going to take it up this ramp and off the bridge. And I didn't, because the person that I was with, unplanned, after 6 months of us meeting, she fell pregnant. And it was around that time I thought, no, there's like a little person coming that's going to need me. And maybe I wasn't really ever going to, I don't know. I know at the time it just felt like, I don't know if it's that I wanted to die, but I was struggling so much with all the things that were going on and didn't know how to navigate it. And it felt even more difficult because I'd spent so much time doing kind of self-development and to a degree understanding like behavior and psychology. So then when it was all this was happening, it's like, God, I understand all this stuff and I still have no way of managing this. So it was a process. And I would say, honestly, I mean, I would say it was November last year that I felt like I really actually became like really sort of come out of it, and not to that extent. I'd say maybe that was 2 years of being not great. At the peak of how bad I felt, maybe that lasted about 6 months. which is quite a while to be feeling like that. Yeah.
That's amazing. I think it's important for everyone to understand how long we can be in these different cycles and how different things can trigger them. That's like a moment that we remember in time. It's like, oh yeah, that's when it really started to unravel. And then depending on the lives that we built for ourselves, it can take us a very long time to ultimately work through that. And I think that that's really important to mention, because we often get presented this idea like, oh, here's how you deal with this in 5 minutes, or here's how you can deal with this in 10 minutes and do this meditation and it'll all be fixed. And I think those might be tools that support us along the way, but really there's some other much deeper evolution that's taking place. And it seems like it's connected to our destiny and it's much deeper. And along that way, the mind can play tricks on us and make us think really crazy things, like, you know, the idea of being able to escape in some way, you know, very dramatic, even though we ultimately can't. And I think that that's another aspect of the sort of fallacies of life we get presented with, that really there's no out to life. I've searched for it for many different ways and angles through all the different ceremonies I've done, and ultimately found that there is no out to this universe. We're made of the universe. We're part of the universe. We're made of this earth. We're part of this earth. And so even if we could somehow get out of the body, we can't get out of the soul. And the soul is the part of us that's really in development that we're going through all the time. But it brings up a really good question about the exploration of shadow and the different aspects of us that are kind of the less pretty, or, you know, less flashy, the less ones we would want to share. And I appreciate you being so open about sort of in that moment of despair and wanting to escape, having, you know, pretty extreme thoughts. Like, what's it like for you? And what, first of all, what is the shadow for you? And what is it like for you to, you know, work through it?
Yeah, great question. I would say for me, the shadow, I feel like there's two sides of it. I think one of the issues that we have in this space of growth is that certain words get used where they use the same word, but it has different meaning. For example, when people say, like, use the term light, like sometimes people mean light in the sense of what people might call like lighter emotions, love and kindness, compassion and empathy. Then some people might use the term light as in the physical feeling of like a lighter feeling in the body. Then sometimes the term light gets used as the light of consciousness, which is, you know, the seeing awareness. So then with shadow for me, I think of like two parts of it. One, I would say, is the elements of us that we kind of fragment from and abandon as we're kind of moving through life, where we might experience certain aspects of rejection, or we feel shame about certain parts of us, and we almost reject those elements of us and we kind of stuff them down into the darkness, thinking that it's not allowed, they're not allowed to show up and to be seen. I would say that's one element. And the other element, I would say, how I understand it, is the parts of us that we just don't see, which so they do tie in. You know, if we have our conscious awareness, and I guess the other parts of the shadow are the parts of us that we just are not aware of. And it's actually something that I've been really sat with recently, just kind of thinking about how important it is to face one's own darkness, to see that it's there, and actually to realize that it's not personal to you to have that. It's actually part of our humanity, and not to reject those parts, because actually as we reject those parts, we're just rejecting parts of ourselves, which is more shame, which is more abandonment of elements of who we are, rather than seeing it and saying, actually, this is just part of my humanity. It's there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the shadow is it's confusing for a lot of people, which is why I really like the idea of you separating it into these two different forms of being able to look at it. What should we do with the things that people want to bury, like the aspects of themselves that they just want to shove down and not look at? What are some things you've found that have worked for you to actually bring those up into the light, you know, the way you described it, in consciousness, and ultimately learn to deal with them so that they don't drive you?
I think one of the things, first of all, if people are embarking on that journey, is actually knowing in advance that it can actually be very uncomfortable. It can be very uncomfortable to face those parts of you, because if you've abandoned or rejected certain elements of who you are, you've done it for a reason. And actually to then face them can be very uncomfortable. I think it's really important to preface it with that. I think when you then start to see it, again, it's almost kind of making it less personal to you and realizing that this is actually part of our humanity, and it's part of the journey to, you know, like self-actualization, and it's meant to be uncomfortable and not to reject that. And it's okay. It's okay for it to be uncomfortable, and it's okay for it to bring up a lot of discomfort. And it's okay to, like, if the feelings of shame arise, kind of accepting that in advance. And then I would say it's coming from a place of deep compassion. And one of the things that I try to remind myself frequently is people can only ever operate from the level of consciousness they're at in that moment, including myself. And so it's like kind of taking off the judgment of the parts, and then taking off the judgment for myself for abandoning the parts, or for those parts, you know, being there. And that kindness and compassion, which is maybe just understanding, at some time in my life, I didn't know how to integrate these. It's okay that I thought these parts weren't okay. It's okay that this came up and I felt shame around it, because at the time, that's actually all I could do. And I think having that deep feeling of empathy and compassion for myself, and actually as I do it for myself, I can do it for you, and I can do it for everybody else. And I think that's the importance of seeing your own shadow or your own darkness, is then when you see someone else, you witness, oh, that's what's going on for them. And if you can come from that place of compassion for yourself, I think you can offer it for them too.
Yeah, that's profound. I love the idea of recognizing that you can only be in the state of consciousness you're in, and you can't fault somebody else for the state of consciousness they're in, or that's the state of consciousness you're in. So it's the snake eating its own tail. You know, you never get out from it. You got to bring a level of deep acceptance to that, to understand that we're all in different states of consciousness all at the same time. And that interaction is ultimately like a beautiful flower of life that we're kind of co-evolving through in different ways. As you've worked through that yourself, have you worked with psychedelics in any way in terms of your own personal development, and how and when did they come into your life?
Yeah. So yeah, just before I turned 28 was the first time I drank ayahuasca, and I then had 6 months later the ceremony again, and 6 months later again, and 6 months later again. So 4 times over 2 years. And then I had 5 years where I didn't have ayahuasca, but in that time I did try mushrooms and LSD and DMT. And actually, so ayahuasca 7 years ago was the first time I'd taken a state-altering substance that wasn't alcohol. So I've drank alcohol, but hadn't done anything else. And I first, in fact, my friend that I was with yesterday, he first did ayahuasca, I think it was 11 or 12 years ago. And I was kind of presented it then, and it was a hard no from me then. I wasn't interested in what at the time, what I thought was, I would have just called drugs. And, it just wasn't, I think the narrative and the way that I understood them and the way that we got told about them at school, you know, that kind of, you know, the school specials, and you're going to jump off a building, that type of thing. So I was kind of in that narrative. And what was interesting was, is over time, like, it went from a hard no to a maybe someday. And it kind of kept evolving to the point where I remember just every single day, I just felt like I was being called. I was like, I can't ignore this. I've got to do this. And then that, I had my first experience. And for me, it really kind of actually shaped or reshaped how I think or thought things worked. I remember laying there thinking, oh, this is what God is. Right. Okay. And I went from not believing in God to, there's no wonder I didn't believe in that God, because that isn't what it is. And now it makes sense. And I felt this deep connected feeling, and I felt just everything that had ever happened in my entire life made complete sense. I understood why everything had to happen the exact way that it did. I felt so much gratitude for all of it. I felt connected to everything. I felt like it just reshaped how I saw things. And it was the most profound and beautiful state I'd ever been in. And of course, with these things, and what I didn't have at the time really was actually a path of integration. So maybe for a couple of weeks after, I felt like I was just floating like a cloud through life. And then, you know, things would then start to come up and some of the old triggers and patterns would start to reemerge. And I didn't really have a way. And, you know, I think this is something that people that maybe are embarking in psychedelics, and of course you're the expert here, but it's that knowing how to integrate after. How do we now take this and start to integrate it and work through things? And that was the thing that was missing for me.
In that first ceremony that you did, when the ayahuasca started to take effect, what was that like for you? Walk me through the actual ceremonial experience.
Yeah. Let me think back, because it was 7 years ago. I remember laying there and just starting to look around the room, because at first nothing was happening. And I took a second drink. And then I started to, this is interesting, seeing these patterns. They started to get more and more vivid and more kaleidoscopic. And then things started to appear through the patterns. There was like snakes and teeth and different things. I was like, oh, okay, this is happening. And at first I thought, this is what it's going to be. Like, okay, I guess this is what it is. And then it was just ramping up more and more and more. And then actually two demonic kind of entities entered into the room. And I was like, oh, shit. And I saw these things. And my first instinct, and you know, this is someone who's a lifelong martial artist. I opened a martial arts school when I was 21. I can coach martial arts. Oh, man, I was like really good at martial arts. I was teaching 23 classes a week when I was 16. So my kind of go-to thing was, okay, it's time to fight these. Let's go. And all of a sudden it was like, I was in this arena, like almost like a gladiator type arena, ready to fight these two demonic entities that stood in front of me. And then I just looked closely at them. And I just realized, oh, these aren't evil. This is pain. This is what I can see is their pain. And then I realized that. And then the thing that came up was, the thing they need is love. Like, love is the thing that they need for that pain to go away. The thing that they never had, like, is the reason they're that way. And it was, offer them love. And then in that, they just kind of went away. And then it just became this most blissful experience of where I just entered this state of, like, pure oneness and love. And then that was the kind of the rest of it. And I'd look around the room and I was, like, seeing equations on the walls and measurements of how things were working. And I could see the sound waves traveling towards me. And I just felt like I was a combination of Neo reading the Matrix and like I'd taken the Limitless pill. And that was like the experience for the rest of it.
How long did that whole thing last?
I think the first one was about 5 hours. About 5 hours, the first one.
And in that 5 hour time, did it feel like when you were in it that it was even longer than 5 hours, or did it seem shorter? What was like time duration for you during that?
Yeah, it was interesting. It was the first time, it was my first experience of time not really having meaning. So it was like it was all time and no time. It's hard to kind of explain, where it's like, has this been a long time or has it been a minute? I couldn't really tell. And that was almost like, oh, that's interesting how, like, it got me thinking about the perception of time and what time is. So yeah, it felt like both. It both felt longer and shorter.
No, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, often I'll ask to see the clock after, you know, 3/4 of a way through a ceremony or towards the end of the ceremony. And you can feel the energy is coming to a point that, you know, it's sort of like peaked out and everything's coming down really gently and nicely. And you look at the clock and you can't believe that that's the amount of time that's actually gone by. Not long, not short. It just doesn't register at all that was sort of the passage of time. It almost seems like when you go to that state of oneness, that you actually transcend the passage of time, and it doesn't even feel like time's actually moving, you know, so it wouldn't even be long. It wouldn't even be short. It's just this love space that seems to be all encompassing. That seems like a very amazing first experience to reach that. You mentioned God, and this idea that what you had been taught about God wasn't God, and what you had experienced made sense now, that there would be a new kind of concept or a new definition for God. Walk me through that transition.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, the God that I didn't believe in was a white man with a beard in the sky. That was the God that I didn't believe in. And then I had this experience of just feeling this energetic, I want to use the word force, but I'm not sure if that's the right word, but I'm going to go with that for now, because that's what's coming to me. That's just in everything, that flows through everything, that makes everything possible, that makes everything work, that how everything in my body that's operating exactly as it needs to is this kind of energy that moves through me, and it's the same that moves through the trees. And part of me felt like, I understand why there's this archetypal God, because it's very hard to explain what God is, that feeling I have. And even now, it's like, it's hard to really, as soon as we use a word, we're reducing the essence of what it is to a sound out of our mouths. And so it is complicated. So I can understand why maybe at some point it was tried to be put in this idea that's maybe easier for people to create a relationship, because it's easier to create a relationship with a person, maybe. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about psychedelics, and for me specifically ayahuasca, is that it's not an intellectual understanding, it's an embodied experience of knowing. And it's not, do I believe in it, it's, oh, I now I know it, got it.
That's amazing transition from the idea of having to believe in something to having an experience that is now a knowledge. I've always thought that was one of the greatest gifts of ayahuasca as well, is that you can be in a situation where you've been taught to believe in things, but you don't believe, like you're saying, the way you were taught. Whether or not there's anything behind it that's fundamentally real or shared is, up for the person who's going to have the experience. And I felt the same way. I didn't have a connection to God in any way that I could relate to before having the experiences in ayahuasca. And then after having the experience, very similar to the way you're describing, this omnipresent force that's in and through absolutely everything. It is what is allowing everything to exist and happen. It's why everything continues to persist and happens. And it includes the physical material world. And it's in the words that you're trying to say to try to describe it while you're saying that they don't fully describe it, but it's actually in there, like the code of it's in there. And if we were in an ayahuasca ceremony right now, out of those words, you would be able to see the frequencies that represent what you're talking about. You could actually see them, you know? And I also understand the difficulty in trying to explain that. And I think that we're really talking about an evolution in the philosophy that sits underneath religions that we're trying to describe God for the last thousands of years. And what we are describing is a real evolution on that concept, to not having to have faith in or believe in that principle anymore, but having found a way to have direct experience. And with that direct experience, you don't need the archetype, and you don't need the motif, you don't need the simile or the metaphor, you don't need another form of description. You have this direct experience of this kind of consciousness, and you have this direct experience of divinity. And afterwards, everyone I know who's had it, which is now in the thousands of people, say the same thing. You now can't get away from it. Before, when you first had it, it's like you don't even know how to have it, right? You don't even know where to find it. And then you now see it everywhere. It's in everything. It's part of everything. And so I think that that is a real evolution on the religious philosophy and on philosophy in general. And it's also a real evolution on our collective understanding of divinity. And I think it's one of the great gifts that ayahuasca has brought to the world, and that's finding its way into the psychedelic renaissance. From that first experience that you had of divinity, has that continued for you as you've continued your journey?
Oh yeah. 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 It's just got deeper and deeper, actually, to the point now where I feel like I can experience channeling, maybe, I guess is the term. And I actually don't have clarity on exactly what it is that I am channeling. If it's the highest realm of myself that is kind of infinite and not just in my body, if that makes sense. So I'm not sure if it's something external. Maybe it's both. Maybe it's me that's in the external. But sometimes it will appear in ways. I mean, at first it happened for me in 2020, where I wrote for a couple of hours and none of it was my thoughts. And it was after having been fasted for the day and going for a long walk and doing meditation. And then I wrote for 2 hours. That was, biblical and with explanations of what the deeper spiritual teachings were that get missed in like Christianity that used to be part of it, but don't get taught now. And this is for someone who's not a Christian or familiar with the Bible. So that was really interesting. And actually that was actually almost like an ayahuasca level state change during that, where things actually really kind of changed for me. And now I kind of have a much more consistent connection with that. And that actually began in November last year. It began with me asking, what am I meant to be doing? And something came through. And now I find that can come through all the time. What's interesting is that I feel like I enter a deep, deep stillness. I can ask a question. I enter a deep stillness where my mind almost just goes off. And an answer will come through. And what's interesting is sometimes the answer is the complete opposite thing to what I thought the answer was going to be. That's what's fascinating. And when it comes through, it's like I feel a settling in my body of truth in it. And it'll be like, whoa, okay, that is not what I was thinking. an opposite thing will come through. So that's been really fascinating. And, you know, I try not to be too fixed on what that is. I think sometimes the temptation to say, this is fill in the blank. But being very honest, I'm not entirely sure, like I said before, but I know it's something that's going on. And I do attribute that to the, I would say the psychedelic medicines and kind of allowing me access to that. And I feel like I can now access it more. Just kind of on the day to day.
Yeah, you know, as you were mentioning it with the word shadow and the word light and stuff like that, these different meanings, I've also found it really hard navigating between the new age and the plant medicine and the psychonaut use of language around all of these phenomena. And I try to think of them as really phenomena. They're experiences that are outside the normal box, and we don't have them all the time. And when they do happen, they're incredibly impactful. And the people who have them, you know, they know that they're not just making it up. They know it's not some invented story. It is truly happening, and it's life-changing for them. And I've always thought of that as a shift in consciousness, that someone is actually experiencing a shift. But then to put language around it, like you're describing, putting language around God is really hard. You know, you say it might be outside you. It might be the you that's outside you. It might be the highest level of you that's inside you. That's like the highest self. It might be coming from something else that isn't even 100% you related, but it's certainly not reflecting the way you generally think. And I've thought about that a lot in terms of this idea of channeling. And I mean, I hear the word channel a lot, and I hear the word portal a lot. And I've been trying to understand both. What is the channel and what is the portal? And if there's a portal, where is it going to and from? And if it's a channel, what's opening and closing the nature of that channel, and who's on the other side, or what's on the other side of this channel, or what's actually being described by that phenomena? For you, you mentioned that there's an experience of kind of an inner silence that takes over, and then this something else comes through. Go into that experience a little bit more. What was it like the first time that you were just sitting there and all of a sudden the channel opened and information started to come through it?
Yeah, so the first time, it was the 22nd of November 2020. It was my daughter's 4th birthday. I'd taken her, because her mum and I aren't together. We have a beautiful co-parenting relationship. I'd taken my daughter, she'd be with me for the morning, she woke up with me for her birthday. I took her to her mum's, and then I came back, went for this walk. I was fasted and did a long meditation. And I've been kind of contemplating some things whilst I was walking. I was kind of in a contemplative kind of state, and then got back, did some meditation, had a hot bath, and I was just kind of laying very still, and I just kind of felt almost like an urge to write. And I almost also hadn't looked at my phone that day. It's interesting how all these little things, I think, add up. So no devices. And I decided not even to turn on the lights, just light some candles. And it wasn't like this was a regular thing for me. This was just kind of, for whatever reason, I felt called to do this. And I just got out a journal and just began, I just wrote down God, question mark. And then just started writing. It was interesting because I could almost observe myself, and I was almost fascinated and excited to observe this really interesting experience that I was having. It's like I was kind of almost a little bit separate from myself, like I was writing and I didn't know the next thing that was going to come out. And then it's like, then I would then see him like, what is this? Let's keep going. And then I almost kind of go back into that and write some more. And that happened for about 2 hours. And that was, yeah, really fascinating. And probably the most powerful that it's been, but also maybe I could say the most powerful because it was the most unfamiliar. Now sometimes it will just happen in ways where, sometimes it comes through in dreams. In fact, let me see if I can reach this. So back in November last year, I was watching something on Da Vinci and how Da Vinci used to write in mirror image. And I said to my girlfriend at the time, I said, I struggle to write normally, never mind mirror image. and anyway, I went to bed, and that night I had a dream. And actually it was Jesus came to me in a dream and said, there's not a thing that a human ever has or ever will conceptualize that isn't possible for you to, because you're all made of the same consciousness. And I woke up that morning and I got out this book, and I then proceeded to write, I don't know if this is going to be mirror image or not because of the camera, but all of this was just a full page mirror image. And if you actually hold it the other way to the light, it says, last night I had a dream where Jesus came to me and said that there is nothing in the universe that a human has done or created that I can't already do. I just have to access it. Last night I was watching something on Da Vinci and how he could write in mirror image. When I saw it, I thought you must have to be a genius to do that. This morning, after that dream, I wanted to put it to the test. Whilst it might not be perfect, I'm writing all of this in mirror image. Last night, I thought that was impossible. So that was like another experience where it was like waking up and I just sat down and I almost felt again this kind of like emptying of my own mind, and I just started to do it. I was like, wow. And what I really like about this is, and it's not that I think I'm in any way special or different or unique. Well, I am, but in the same way that everyone is. But I think it's actually, I think maybe we all have access to this dimension that I think we're just often, I think it's like a door. And is the door open? Is the door closed? And I think that door, I feel it's the thinking mind and the identity of being a separate self. I think that's what it is.
How do you move through that? I mean, I agree. This idea of the thinking mind and a separate self, the combination of it is a thing that creates separation as a philosophy, and it seems very real, or as an illusion. People say the illusion is separation, right? So the thinking mind, I really like that idea that from that you're creating this idea of separation. How do we turn off that feeling of separation? How do we turn off that patterning that we're doing that is really just two things, right? That this analytical mind creating this concept, the separate self, et cetera. How do we turn that off so that we tap into this greater phenomena that you're describing?
Well, I think there's maybe, you know, one ways that people can do it is, you know, traveling to Peru and doing ayahuasca with you and actually getting a felt experience. Because I think once you know it, I think everything changes. Now, for people that haven't done that or aren't willing to do that, I think we have to get to a place of awareness. It has to be awareness of the, we could say, ego, which is the identity of self. And I think the ego gets, I think it has a tough time, and people demonize it a lot as though it's a bad thing. And I don't think it is. I think a wounded ego can be the cause of, you know, some pretty pretty heavy stuff. But I think the ego in and of itself is actually just our kind of separate sense of identity. And I don't think that always has to be bad or evil or heavy. I think actually, if we've done a lot of healing, I think that idea of earth me, maybe we could call it, like, doesn't have to be this like root of all evil. I think it's actually maybe the identification with ego plus a deep sense of shame. I think it's those combinations. So I think if we can have awareness that I do have a sense of who I am, but that sense of who I am is not all that I am. And I think that's the first awareness, is that sense of who I am is not all that I am. And if it's not all that I am, then what else am I? And I think if we can start to explore that and realize, well, if I can quiet that part of me that thinks it's me, what else could I access?
No, that's an amazing idea. When I was going deep into this, trying to work my way through this sort of hall of mirrors, it sounded in my head like the head would ping the idea of myself almost at like the speed of thought. It would be just like not saying me, 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 but like that's what the brain was doing. It was making everything like that. And I love this idea that you can question beyond that sort of echolocation in your own brain and, you know, ask yourself if there's more to you that's beyond just that fixation. And I think that's a great way to, like, you know, almost like trip the switch, like get the brain to all of a sudden look for something else, to see something else. That's fascinating way of looking at that. I really appreciate that idea. Like, how has all of this stuff over the last years added up for you to, you know, like making sense of it? It sounds like you've had such amazing experiences with ayahuasca, you know, seeing divinity and moving past your own disbeliefs about the way other people shared it with you, moving through the dark night of the soul, moving through different aspects of ego, these channelings and live, you know, visitations by, you know, really incredible figures, this idea of moving beyond the fixation of your own consciousness and into this greater understanding of who you are and what you are in this universe. How has all of that come together?
It's funny because I hear those things, I just laugh because I think sometimes you got to help but laugh because it's wild. You know, I now feel like it's actually it's excitement for me, because I don't by any means think I am there, but I'm really happy being here. And I'm excited for the journey that's to come, actually, because at one time, I think a lot of the things that I've come to peace with in myself and how things work, but also there's a piece with how much I don't know, and there's excitement around finding that out, because now I've actually got reference to look back over the last 7 years and say, wow, that was wild, and look at how much I've learned and understood. And then I think, well, I'm 35, like, it's exciting to think how much more is to come of this. So there's a lot of excitement there, and I think with that I hold it more lightly, whereas before I think I held a lot of it with a lot of weight. And I think sometimes we can do that. It can all get very heavy. And sometimes the pursuit of, you know, trying to find meaning, it can be a heavy one. It's not always sunshine, rainbows and unicorns. We can get a little lost in it. And sometimes actually when we do start to go into the depths of things that we've suppressed or repressed and we've not seen for a long time, and to see those aspects of our own humanity, it can be heavy. So that is part of it. But there is also the other side of it as well, where it is also, there is a lightness there. And I think that lightness for me is a sense of realizing that I am not just this separate entity, and that I actually truly believe that I'm held. I believe that I'm held by all that is. And I think that all that is a thing that brought you and I together, from hearing you on Aubrey's podcast, or Dr. Mark Gaffney, who I heard, you know, back in November, and he's been on the podcast, and he's invited me out to Vermont next month to go and attend the board meeting that they're having over there, and and Dr. John Churchill was on, and all these like just wonderful people, where I was told in November, as long as you do your part, we'll bring the others. Like, but you've got to meet it halfway. And I think for me, it's almost this kind of, there's more of a sense of peace, because I think sometimes, especially if we felt like we maybe didn't have all the things that we wanted or needed growing up, of thinking that those things aren't available and we've got to carry it all ourselves. And I think that's what gets very heavy. But for me now, I feel like I'm not carrying this alone. I feel like there's something that's just infinitely expansive that's willing to meet me and bring other people into my life. And I've got no idea if I've just answered your question, because I think I went off on a tangent, but that's what was coming up.
That's incredible. The idea of not being alone and being held and supported in everything you're doing, I think, is a beautiful way of recognizing the context of life. And, you know, I agree with it completely. I think that once you've tapped into something much greater than yourself, the idea of the weight of life, we call it el peso de la vida, the weight of life, is no longer yours to shoulder. And that weight can be, ultimately it's weightless, right? Like, it's understanding that you're in this vast space-time continuum, this vast universe, like expanding the imagination to encompass the entire universe. And there you are, this, you know, unbelievably small being in the middle of it all, truly supported by absolutely everything that's there. And it's a really poetic, beautiful way of looking at it. I loved that what you were talking about before, about seeing these demons, these two demons, and having this martial arts background, which is, you know, part also combat and stuff. And, you know, this idea of warriorship coming up, and there's a lot of people who are really, you know, concerned with that and into it, but then realizing that those demons needed love. And I came to similar realizations. I was part early in my career as a part of a warrior path. As well. And not always did we know that what those beings needed was love. But after about a year or two of practice, I realized that as well, that they were all ultimately needing that love, and that love would be the best way to face and confront those kinds of energies when they came up in ceremony. And then when you were talking about ego, I felt the same way about that, you know, ego is being demonized, you said. And I thought, well, you know, demon for demon, if you demonize your own ego, what you're really, you know, recognizing is that ego needs love. And then there's a lot of people who come to psychedelics and ayahuasca, and they're saying that they need ego death. And I always thought ego death is actually death. Like, you don't need death. You need life and you need love. And so I was wondering how that journey's been for you as well, in terms of ego and love, and what, you know, for you has been most impactful on that part of your development?
Oh yeah, good question. I definitely developed a very inflated sense of self through that kind of 21 to 28 period. It's interesting really, because I kind of went from one end of the spectrum to the other. And actually both the ego, because sometimes people think the person that's like uber confident and, you know, like if you think of someone with a quote unquote big ego, I think there's a narrative for what people think that is. But then you might take the person that's very shy and reserved and think they have no ego. But no, they equally have an ego, because their sense of self is rooted in, I'm not enough, I can't be heard, I can't be seen. And that's still a story. That's still ego. And I kind of went from, like, my ego just shifted. Like, its sense of identity went from not enough, not worthy, not good enough, shouldn't be here, not okay to be me, to then this like hyper-inflated kind of playboy lifestyle, driving the supercars, dating, like absorbent amounts of you know, like a wild dating life, and doing all of that. And it was just, but both were actually just very, very different, but very strong senses of who I was that were actually opposing ends. It's actually been easy for me to identify my ego, because they were so strong. And I think sometimes the quiet ego can be harder to see. So for me, now I just try to keep awareness, and I will spot it. I will notice it. And I was, ever since November 2020, when I had that experience of writing things that were biblical. I've since thought a lot of times since then, you know, like what did this mean? And for me, that's what Jesus going into the wilderness to face the devil for 40 days and 40 nights, or to be tempted by the devil. That's what I think it is. That's what I think it's actually meant to represent. And the question that I've sat with is, what is the wilderness in my life? When do I enter the wilderness where the devil, and if we just replace the word devil with ego, what do I do where the ego shows up? And if I can know that about myself and not try to reject it, but almost kind of like smirk a little bit at it, like, there you are. I knew you were going to show up. And again, hold it a little lighter. But I think like that's really helpful. And it's, you know, what is the wilderness in my life where the devil, or, you know, because the devil, again, is just an archetype. It's the fallen angel. You know, it's the ego. You know, what times in my life does my ego arise? And if we can start to kind of look at that with some like kind of like being inquisitive with some inquiry to explore that and go, oh yeah, I do it there. And again, not with shame or judgment. I think so many people do that where they get upset or frustrated at themselves because, oh, I'm not love and light. No, we're human. And actually part of our humanity is having ego. And that's why we can't reject it, because we're human. So it is there, but can we learn to understand it well? Can we have a very intimate relationship with the ego and have a healthy one and know that when it does arise, go, oh, I see you. And maybe sometimes the ego wanting to get its fix is okay. If it's not like harmful, but it's like, but do I see it? Am I aware of it? And I think that for me is key. It's just having the awareness, because with the awareness of it, I think that's how it stops it from kind of getting out of hands. And we can kind of keep it in check, or when you can go, okay, I see you. That's enough now. you calm down.
That's fun. The idea of ego being part of the experience, not a negative to the experience, is a powerful shift. Ego has to be part of life. It has to. There is no way to have self-awareness in space-time without there being the part of us that we call ego. And so you have an awareness of yourself. You're aware that you're separate from the walls. You're aware of, you know, you're driving a car, that there's another car over there. You know, you got to stay in your lane. Like all of those things are indicative of the presence of ego and that aspect of us to define as separate when necessary. I think the demonization of ego is in its own right dangerous and part of a game that ego is playing. You know, I like your idea of saying that you can witness that aspect of yourself. You can make it okay. You can accept it. And then you can ultimately also enjoy it in a certain aspect, and then not have it be the part of you that has to be like running your life or running, you know, the story and the experience that you're having. Seems like you've been on this incredible journey from, you know, learning spirituality young and, you know, really being immersed in your own personal development for quite a while now, and also having had a very early and very young career. So it's like you have this incredible accelerated development. What is success for you out of everything you've experienced?
Yeah, that's a good question, because what success was for me isn't what it is now. You know, at one time it was definitely, I think it was the things that I was working towards. It was the ladder up the wall that as I was climbing up it, I realized it was the wrong wall, and that wasn't success, because we do have this, you know, narrative within, especially within the West or within like capitalist kind of society of what success looks like. For me, I think where I've got to, and this is kind of based around the program that I'm creating to help people that just resonate with me, that feel me and my energy, that want to maybe venture on a path together. It's this idea of freedom within, and that's broken down into three parts. It's freedom from the past, so the stories that we're holding on to that we think define us, which actually act as shackles. So it's freedom from the past. It's freedom to be. It's freedom to be here and now, and it's freedom to become. And I think a lot of people talk like, a lot of people think like happiness is the goal. And I don't think it's happiness that we're seeking. I think it's freedom. I think it's the freedom to be who we are, the way that our soul, you know, arrived here to be expressed. I think it's that freedom that we're mainly seeking rather than happiness. I think when people think they want financial freedom, I don't really think that's what they want, because what do they think that will give them? It's probably the freedom to be who they are. And I think that's ultimately what we're searching for. So for me, success is freedom, but specifically freedom within. It's that freedom to be who I am, freedom from the past of the things that have held me in chains, and the freedom to become what my heart and soul yearns for, not from a place of needing to be this so I'm enough, but the way that acorn wants, there's a desire within the acorn to become an oak tree, not because it's egoic and got something to prove to the tree next to it. It's actually because that's within its fabric of existence and nature, that's what it's here to become. So I think that freedom to be and the freedom to become, to me, that is, to be able to exist like that is success, because I feel like we're no longer missing the point. We're actually here doing what we're meant to be doing, which is being what we're meant to be.
That's beautiful. For people to be able to find you, people who resonate with you and your message, how would you like people to be able to find you and get in touch with you?
Instagram is probably the best way. Sabri Ghazale. And maybe that can go in the show notes, rather than me spelling it out. Also Sabri Ghazale, Lost and Found podcast on YouTube. If people want to see similar types of, you know, conversations, like-minded people and these types of, you know, thoughts and ideas. I'll say they're probably the best two places, and then people can message me on there and I can help direct them to the thing that's best for them. I do a free call every Thursday, which is just a different kind of topic or idea, and we'll just dive into it as a group. It's just, there's a lot of people that maybe have interests in this or are on this path, and I think sometimes they can find it difficult to find community to share with. So I wanted to hold just a free space for that every week. And then, yeah, and then there's like opportunities to do programs and one-on-one things if people feel called to that.
Amazing. Sabri, thank you so much for being on the Blue Morpho podcast. It's incredible to talk with you again, and I look forward to the next time we get to see each other in person.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Hamilton, and thank you for everything you're doing.